Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Keith Harrison. Keith is a police officer who, like many military service members and veterans, have struggled with his mental health. He's here to talk about his struggle and why it's important to choose to recover, not just for yourself, but also for the people who are around you. So welcome to the show, Keith. I'm glad to have you on.
Scott, man, I know we spoke briefly at the beginning here, but I really appreciate this opportunity to talk to you, your audience, and listen to a few of your shows in the past. And I just really want to acknowledge what you're doing is super important, and the commitment you have is outstanding. So I really appreciate you allowing me to be a part of your community.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for the listeners who are out there who maybe are not familiar with you, why don't you tell us just a little bit briefly about yourself and your background?
Yeah. So I am a police officer. I've been a police officer now for over 16 years. I am in Canada in a major police service in Ontario. And I have seen a lot of things, been into a lot of things where in the past, I wish I had taken liberty to get treatment and stuff, but really had it come to a boiling point per se, breaking in 2018 when I had sought internal help for my struggles and wanted to get out of the front lines because I have always been a primary response officer. I have never had homicide or any sort of detective's office and stuff like that. It's always been frontline. You call, and as you all know, as frontline officers, you never know what you're going to get, right? It's a complete crapshoot of the dispatch call. So you're always in that hypervigilant state, and I just needed to get away from that. And unfortunately, I did not get the internal support and had to look elsewhere. And I'm looking back on the 3 years that I was away from my job, healing, growing, really in a place now where I'm almost thankful that I was able to take the route that I did, because I was able to get to a point where I couldn't even imagine was even possible for myself, my mental health state. So I'm back to work now. In 2021, I returned shortly after being 3 years off. And when I did return to the work, I just wanted to set an intention, give this a go. And if policing isn't a go for me 20 years from now, I can at least say, you know what? They didn't drive me away, or it didn't break me. It just wasn't for me. And maybe I will find a new purpose doing something else, but I at least needed to go back with the mindful intention of, we got to give this a go. And if it's a good fit, if it's healthy for me, if it's making me still have joy in every day doing what I'm doing, great. And if it isn't, well, then let's pivot and move on to something else. And I'm really blessed that that intention was so strong. And when I did return to the work, I made a very clear point that peer support would be something that would be very much involved with, advocating for guys I work closely or girls that I work with, that I would be somebody that I needed 10 years ago, that if they saw me, they would know, yeah, I had a pretty dark time. And my last day of work was either I drive into the station or they find me in my patrol car with my note and everyone who failed me. And that's what it came down to. So the fact that people know of this and I'm back to work, I want that to be a symbol of, you don't need to be seen as a broken toy, or you don't need to be seen as something that if you're there or close to that, that it's the end. Hey, that guy's, he's smiling all the time. Why is he so happy? Like, can I get on that? Just really just push towards that and really highlighting the organizations and services that were really a big part of my recovery. And that got me to Response Apparel. So you know, that's kind of what I'm doing. A lot of stuff.
Yeah. So I want to dig into a little bit more on your mental health journey. And you talked about some failures along the way as far as leadership and things like that. But for you personally, it seemed like it was a progression over the years as you were working, especially on that frontline first responder. You're the one who's showing up to, like you said, it's a crapshoot. You don't know what you're going to get when you walk in the door or when you pull up on a scene responding to that call. What was that like? How did that progression work? And then when did you get to that breaking point when you were like, this is too much? Something has to change one way or the other.
Yeah, Scott, unfortunately, there were some pretty lived trauma experiences only within the first year and a half that I was on that really have stuck with me. I can speak openly about it now, but one of the ones that kind of really stuck with me and really haunted me through my PTSD and really weighed on the mental health of myself was an infant death that I had really early on in my career. At the time, my ex and I were expecting our first. We were about 3 weeks out, 4 weeks out. And that really, I can talk openly now, which is, I guess, part of my recovery, the ability to work through the event. But it had me up all night because I was the one that didn't save the baby's life. And I wanted to get checked. I broke down in front of everybody. I did not hold things back because as a new officer, I didn't know any better. Like These were my emotions and I felt I could openly expose them and they would be seen. Not the case.
Right.
Job was to be done and that needed to be not suppressed, stuffed in, but you need to control that. You need to get back in there. You need to finish the job. It's not over. You can't tap out. And I wanted to tap out. I wanted somebody to. So that's carried me through with my children, stuff. Every one I've had, the erosion of my family life and stuff like that, where up all night being seen as somebody who's lazy, somebody who's always tired, not knowing that I was up the whole night because I knew if I went to bed and my daughter or my other daughter or my son would stop breathing, that I be available, but if I slept, they would die, right? Like just having that constant at the early stages. Couple that with the egos and the mindset, the stigmas around the male-driven ego environment of first responders, military. It's something that I never really thought myself to be a guy that would have that, but you're kind of not forced, but you need to do that in order to survive, because if not, you're seen as weak. You're seen as something that can't be trusted, which is further from the case, right? I find a lot of females, I think women are great at acknowledging the internal feelings and they want to talk about stuff. But I think the environment of first responders being male driven, in order to be part of the boys club, they have to kind of adapt that mentality, and it's wrong. There are programs out there. They're loosely put out there in the past. I think they're doing a better job now, but in the past for me, when I was severely struggling, it was, yeah, we have EFAP, chuckle, chuckle. They're a joke. Don't do it. Cause if someone finds out that you're seeking this, you're not going to get the spots. If you go for promotion, you're going to be seen as someone that is not part of the boys club or somebody that they don't want to promote or having a unit to trust and stuff like that. And hopefully, like I said, things are progressing a little bit further along in the spectrum of not seeing things that way, but they're still there. And I think guys like you doing what you're doing, hopefully with me talking about my story, my struggles, it will be seen as something that mental health conversations can be as regular as, hey, Scott, did you go to the dentist today? Oh, you did. Okay, great for you, right? Oh, you went and saw a therapist, you went to talk to someone? Fantastic, right? Because as much as we need to brush and floss our teeth, we need to brush and floss our minds with what we go through.
That's true. And that's part of what this podcast is all about, is trying to break that stigma and get the negative image out of people's head when it comes to going to a therapist or counselor or whoever for your mental health. I was watching a show the other day, and it was a rerun, a show from the 90s or something. And they were talking about someone going to talk to a therapist for something that had happened in their lives. And they looked at the person like they had three heads. Like, why would you go and do something like that? Are you crazy? Is something wrong with you? But just to look at just how far we've come since the 90s to now, or years and years before, there was that stigma where even just going to talk to somebody was looked at like, you are insane. Like, this is something is seriously wrong with you if you're going to go and do that. But now I feel like the conversation has shifted where it's not like that anymore. Maybe in some circumstances it might have a little bit of that, but it's not nearly as bad as it used to be. And so I feel fortunate that we live in a time where we're moving in that right direction. But you're right, there's still some work to be done in that regards to stigmatize mental health, right? And like you said, I know there's a lot of men, especially, who still feel like mental health is one of those things that they should just suck it up and deal with, that type of thing. What are some ways that you've seen that have helped to break the stigma, especially amongst police officers and other first responders?
Well, for me, in my case, I was pretty fortunate to have some outside organizations. Beyond the Blue is an organization that's pretty big here up in Canada. I'm not sure if it's very big in the States where you are, but they have chapters right across from Vancouver, Calgary, right in all through Ontario. And their main mission is to be there for service, both uniform and civilian. Never forget what amazing work civilian entities do in all forms of first responders. I feel sometimes they get left out, dispatchers, and all they see and all they wear is just as heavy at times as uniform members, but they're there for them and their families, because a lot of times we put treatment in the lines of AA, there's it for the addicts, and then there's Al-Anon for the family, right?
Right.
So that they can understand and get that support of why my family member, my loved one, is being a certain way or mannerisms, or why they're caring, or why they're not being the way they're so openly in the past what were. So I sought them, and even though it was taboo, at that point I had already left, and my whole heart never thought I would return to this. I thought it was done, then I was never coming back, and I was just looking for me and what was going to be my next chapter in my life of what I was going to do. And allowing, quickly realizing, talking about yourself is, I'm not going to say stronger than struggling, but there is an immense sense of strength when you're able to take control of your thoughts, take control of your feelings. If I remember, my daughter gets hit by a baseball when she's playing softball, it hurts like hell. The one thing that she's mindful of when to get to a place where she's able to assess things is one thing we control is our breathing, right? So that's one thing that we've really kind of thought of in a sports world. So if we take analogies through the sports world where something's hurting like hell and we're thinking that we can't control anything and the pain's going to last forever, own it on our breath. And that's one thing that when I talk to guys and gals at work or anybody that wants to chatter, things I like to say now and then is to really, that breathing aspect that we have is so powerful in order to control. So I might be able to control the call. I might be able to not control the person I'm dealing with, what they're saying, what they're doing, anything around me. I might even control how I'm feeling. One thing I know I can get on top of is my breath, and taking those pauses, taking that five per se, and really focusing on your breathing, focusing on your breath can make control. Then we're able to think of a thought. And if we can think of a thought, we're able to control what maybe our next step is, good or bad, continue or retreat. So that's one thing pretty big in my toolbox that I like to talk about, is just the breathing aspects and how also, Scott, it's able to help us out and be our friends in times where we want to lash out and rage, say things and quit, right? Sometimes the best response is not to respond, and focusing on that breathing, I know now, is pretty beneficial. That I wish I had that tool in the past in some circumstances that I might have won the debate, but I surely won nothing because of I was unable to control my breath.
Yeah, for sure. And breathing, it sounds like it's such a simple thing. I mean, we all do it every single day. Every whether we're awake or we're asleep, every moment of every day, we're in one phase of breathing or another. We're either breathing in, breathing out, we're constantly doing it, right? I don't know how many times we've done it already just in this, the 15 minutes or so that this episode has been going, right? But we do it all the time. We take it for granted because it's such an involuntary thing that just happens, right? But it can actually work for us to help calm us down and to relax us. People who struggle to get to sleep, focus on your breathing, focus on how you're breathing and feel the breath coming in and out and all that kind of stuff. It really does make a difference when you focus on that. And I'm glad you brought up that thing because it is something that you can control. It's that one little thing that you can control. You always have control over it, no matter what is going on. You could be a police officer responding to a terrible tragedy. You still have control of your breathing. You could be, like you said, your daughter playing softball. You could be running around the bases, or you could be up at bat and you still have control of your breathing. No matter what, you always have control over that. And it can actually change your mental state, and it can actually help to relax you and calm you down. So that I'm really glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, Scott. And I think it's something that's so simple that I think a lot of the time, at least I thought when I was really struggling, is that you needed to go talk to somebody. It needed to be something so big, so monumental, that it was going to be this massive thing, that this task that I had to do. And at that time, I mean, every button I would do up on my shirt in the locker room getting ready felt like I was snapping on 100 pads to my body every time. And it was like, are you kidding me? I'm trying to, like, in a state now where I'm in survival mode, where I'm just trying to get through the day with the best that I can. And now you're trying to put me to do another task, to do something else, to add on to this. No, I don't want to do anything else, right? But self-care and taking care of ourselves and stuff are simple things that we can include in our life. And I think being first responders, with firefighters, military, I think in our training, it's ingrained with muscle memory. So many times you have individuals who get in situations that it's like, well, I just reverted to my training because of the muscle memory. We are so wired in a beautiful state to implement things that we can build on our muscle memory. And I think truly at the beginning of one's career, or even before you're putting it in the application form, these are things that you're doing to build that muscle memory so that down the line, if you're struggling, if you're going through something hard, or someone else is going through something hard, you can be there for them, or you can be there for yourself to implement these things that you automatically, on my go-tos. I don't have to worry about that toolbar, that belt, that vest that I have with all my gear on. I automatically know where all my stuff is. And I'm going to it no matter what. It's just, I know in this situation, this is what I need, and I'm doing it. And I'm not even thinking, I think small things here and there, getting that change, building those small habits that no longer are choices because you automatically do. I think that's when we can really say, as somebody who is in the line of frontline, doing the hard work, doing the beautiful work that needs to be done so that others can live safe. That's when we have, like, I think real change, that you're like, okay, man, like, we're impacting, right? We've made the difference, that this is something that is just automatic. And it's just not a one time off where a poster's hung up and we talk about mental health and say we care, give a number, a phone call, and it's all lip service. We need to get away from that and really implement those muscle memory moments in people's training, that this is something that is as important as learning the law, as in learning fire rescue, as in learning everything. This is as important.
It is. And you talked about earlier being someone that people can come to for support, right? How do we build this community of people who can trust each other and go to each other when something is going on? So that where someone might be having a problem, they come to you and they want to talk to you. A lot of times people don't want to even open up about the fact that there's a problem because they don't want to admit something is wrong for fear of the stigma or whatever. What would you say, from your experience, what would you say would benefit people to start doing in terms of getting that kind of network of people in place so that it's there when
build your tribe. It doesn't need to be a big one. I mean, the strongest tribes sometimes are the smallest ones, and you're just building those resources that you can go to. For myself, what I am passionate about, what my mission is, that anyone that talks to me, and they know when they talk to me, so that if somebody ever hears something or talks about me or says something, they know that conversation is with them and me. It doesn't go further unless it needs to go further, and then that can be addressed. If there is, you know, any chance of extreme self-harm and stuff like that, well, we can talk about what steps need to be done. But if somebody just wants to have a place where they can be seen, heard, and just sometimes just unload their shit. I don't even get to say anything, and people are like, man, I really appreciate that chat. I didn't do anything but listen. But that's sometimes all that someone needs is right. To listen. I just need to get this off my chest. And a lot of times I know in the past I could, you know, Scott, I'm struggling with something, and I'm blaring it all at you. And as I'm talking to you, I'm listening to myself talk, and I'm like, well, I'm finding the solutions on my own. But you've allowed me that space. Yep. And that sometimes all anyone ever needs is a space so that they can seem to be heard. And I think if more members get into peer support, and not just so that they're taking phone calls or they're actually doing the hard work of being somebody who's a peer support, but at least empower themselves with the knowledge, with the teachings, with the tools, with the learning, so that they experience something. Or if they're just chatting, and it's the smallest conversations, I'm not coming to you directly, and I'm passive aggressive per se with what I'm trying to tell you, right?
Yeah.
That they're hearing little buzzwords a lot of times. I know when I'm talking to somebody who gets the journey, that gets what needs to be done, there's a language, there's words that are spoken that, Scott, I don't need to vet you anymore. I don't need to think that I can trust you. You've said a few things that you get it. And that all it is also a couple buzzwords now and then that people need to hear that, like, hey, you know what? This person, I can feel like I can at least talk to them.
Right.
Right. At least attempt to open up. No one's perfect. No one's perfect in peer support. No one's perfect when someone's coming to them about things. We can say things that might help or hinder, but the more mindful we are of our own practice of what we're doing this, I think that's when we can start to help others. It really begins to having all these teachings and really people self-reflecting in themselves. So whether it be journaling every morning, love to do it, journaling at the end of the night, where I can count my wins, count my losses, something that I did really well or something that I'm hoping to do better tomorrow. That self-reflection is so key, because without that, we can really lose sight of being present. And as long as we can be consistently in a present state, there's a real chance where we're living a good, fulfilled life if we stay present, staying on that line rather than taking other routes, which, again, everyone takes their routes, everyone has their journeys. There was multiple times I can say in my past where I had unexplained medical episodes where I thought I was having gut issues. I always had gut issues. Everyone who knows me knows I have gut issues. But that is something where, well, our gut health leads to our mental health, and we control our gut health. If that was talking to me and I wasn't listening to it, right? So we have to really be really present on listening to our bodies, listening to things that are going around us. Because everything I was ever told me, Keith, there's nothing medically wrong with you. Well, there's nothing medically wrong with me. I'm not some sort of secret mystery diagnosis here. What's wrong with me? Oh, wait a second. It's the thing 3 feet above my ass that I need to pay attention to, right?
There you go. That's a good way to put it. I never heard it that way, but I like that. But it's true what you're talking about, how sometimes people just need somebody to listen to them, and they can oftentimes figure out something on their own just by having someone there to listen to. I know in my own life, I do a lot of work with technology. So very often I have to open up a support issue with a company that I might be working with. And as writing in the support information and all the steps that I did to create this problem that is going on, I started thinking to myself, okay, well, there's this other step that I didn't do. Let me go back and try that. And then, oh yeah, boom, that fixed the problem. And now I don't even need to send in anything for support. I figured it out on my own, right? And it happens, right? And even I'm just talking to my wife sometimes. I'll sit down and talk with her about, you know, something that's going on. And as we're talking, I'm like, oh, well, there's this other thing that I hadn't tried yet. Maybe I just need to try that. And boom, now I found a solution to the problem. And it didn't require any deep dives into anything. I just need someone to listen. Sometimes it's, like I said before, it's my computer screen as I'm typing out the problem, right? But still, it's just a way to process the information. I'm thinking through all of the steps. And then I get to a point where I'm like, okay, here's another step that I didn't do. I probably should try it. And boom, that tends to be the thing that ends up fixing the problem. And if it doesn't, at least it's exposed one more possible solution to the problem that I could try. And then I can escalate it to that next step where I can get that extra help that I might need, right? And it's a perfect example of how that just works. Just being there for someone to listen, it can really help them just process through whatever it is that they have going on, right?
And I think it's just, other than feeling like we're amazing, like, oh my God, I'm awesome because I solved this, right? That joy of feeling. But I think that really, and then instills an empowerment in the person who is struggling that, yeah. Hey, listen, like I did this, right? Like we don't need big wins in life sometimes, just small little things to keep things going forward, gets the momentum going. And that's something that they're able to realize in themselves that like, hey, I figured that out. I still have some control. I still got this. I can do this, right? It doesn't have to be seen as doom and gloom and stuff like that, or the worst of the worst.
Yeah, exactly. We all have our own inner voice, our own, you know, mindset and all that kind of stuff. And I actually liked something that you said earlier about when you're journaling, you write down your wins and then you write down the things that you could do better tomorrow, right? The things that maybe didn't go quite so well today, but they weren't necessarily losses. They're just things that you can work on and focus on to improve. So it's just the mindset and the way you think about things. If you list out all of your losses and you write a big, you know, header on top of the page, losses, and here are all the things that I screwed up, like that screws with your mind because it's like, yeah. Wow, I really messed up today. Like I should have done this. Exactly. I'm worthless. I can't do anything right. Look at this. I got a whole page full of stuff that I screwed up today. That's awful. But instead, if you put it as things to work on, things to improve, things to try to get better at, or farm out to somebody else who might be better than me, but it's just a different way of thinking of it. And I like that you said it that way, because it just goes to show that is the mindset that you're coming from right now. And it's not beating yourself up saying, oh, I screwed up, I'm worthless, I'm terrible at all this. It's okay. You know what? I maybe need to work on something a little bit better. It's a good way to look at things because it gives you that thing to work towards to better yourself, right? The goal is always to just be a little bit better today than you were yesterday and better tomorrow than you were today and all of that. And you're continuously improving yourself in that case.
Yeah, that 1% mentality, right, Scott? Like,
yeah.
If I 1% better than I was yesterday, this time next year, Scott is key. We are 365% better than we were. What does that look like? What does a 365% better Scott look like to himself, to his family, to this world, to your podcast, to your community? Buddy, that is like stocks want gains of 365% over a year, right? And we can do this on ourselves by just thinking of that 1% model.
Yeah.
And I can think back of where I was a year ago and looking at that, it's like, I think first responders, because we are very humble in our nature, so as military, we sign up for a job, we're not looking for accolades, we're not looking for medals or pins or attaboys or thank you. So when they do come, they're very dismissed. We're very dismissive when it comes to someone saying thank you or an appreciation for our service and what we do. But man, right. As that person comes on us with something negative, we hold on to that so much harder, right? And we really need to just There are amazing people that we deal with every day. There's people who love and appreciate what we do. So when those people come up to you and say, thank you for your service or thank you for what you did, it's not a sarcastic that someone's lying to us, that we all think everyone is lying to us, right? No, they're genuine, they're sincere, and they're very truly appreciative. And that there is our tokens of allowing our mindset, allowing our minds, allowing our hearts almost to allow that in, that we don't need to be so stoic, so robotic, so emotionally dead when we're working per se, right? So we have to keep things all tight in. We're allowed to have those human moments because I am a human. I'm a police officer, right? And a lot of the times I have had my best from the public, which that's my goal, right? My goal to a call is to get the person's best out of them to help me in an investigation. And they know what I do. I don't need to announce I'm a police officer sometimes when I'm sitting and talking. They can see my uniform. They can see what I'm doing. They want to know where they're talking to a person. They want to know if they're talking to somebody who humanly connects and gets with them. And that's where the real connections, where we can think back to all the different conversations, all the different things we've expressed and experienced in our world. But Scott knows, Keith knows, those human connections that I don't even know what the conversation was about. I don't even know. I have to think really hard of why I even was there. But I know that connection that I had with them, it was on a real deep human level. And that's really, I think, what the public wants to see of our first responders. And I really think we can get there if we start allowing organizations to put first responders first and putting ourselves first, and that it's not selfish for me to think of myself. The airplanes tell you all the time, with the masks come down, don't worry about the person next to you. You're going to worry about you first, right? Like, so just think of it as one thing where we're just putting that mask on ourselves first. We're putting ourselves a second first, not because we're selfish, but that we're better for the next person we're helping if we put ourselves first, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm glad you use that example, because I use that example all the time with the airplanes and the oxygen masks. I love that example, right? But I was even just thinking back to something that you had said earlier about how when you had your kids, you were up all night because if something happened to them, you wanted to be there for them so that you could be the one who helped them, right? But at the same time, you weren't taking care of yourself. You weren't getting the sleep that you needed and things like that. So anyone, ask anybody who knows anything about sleep, if you are sleep deprived, you're not functioning at your 100% level. And in a moment of a crisis, the kid stops breathing or something happens and you need to be 100% on your, that actually could be a detriment. You weren't 100% on your game at that point, right? So you can't, and you've come to realize this over the years, right? Over time, that you need to take care of yourself. You need to step away from certain things to be able to be the best version of yourself that you possibly could be. And so I appreciate you coming on and sharing that message with the audience to let people know that it's okay to take a step back and take care of yourself. Because if you don't do that, you end up hurting the people who you want to help the most, because you're not going to end up being the best version that you possibly can be.
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate all those words. And really, truly, I'm going to take them all, what you said there, and truly think back later on and try to absorb all this, because it's a lot of good things that we're going through now. But, you know, if we as society, I know that the States, athlete Canada, we love our sports. And if we think of that mindset of like, you're a major league baseball player, say, right? And you get sent down to the minors for a rehab assignment. You have all the tools, but you're taking that small demotion per se, people can look at it as something that can break them and never come back, or really taking that step back and really taking that time to focus on what needs to be done. And then you're a Hall of Famer afterwards, right?
Yeah. And think about
the alternative. It's possible. It's possible.
Yeah. And think about the alternative. If you didn't go in and move down to that minor league position to work on yourself and get rehabbed and everything that you need to do to get better, let's say a pitcher, right? And you stay in the major leagues and you're pitching, you end up throwing your arm out to the point where maybe you can never pitch again. And you cut your career short and you become someone who, yeah, as opposed to a Hall of Famer, someone that nobody ever knows about, like down the road, they don't, you're not going to be the Babe Ruth or the anybody like that who you, like everybody all these years later, everybody knows who that is, right? It's just,
yeah,
common knowledge, but you won't be that person because you didn't take the time to take care of yourself, right?
So key. It's so key. And like I said, I'm really blessed. And I think back of, you know, what I was trying to accomplish quietly when I was seeking the help. Not that I was not quiet and letting them know how I was feeling. That was never quiet. But what I wanted to do quietly so that I was not perceived with the stigma as somebody that was broken, that was sent away, that's been used as a, and it's happened. Mm-hmm. Don't be like that guy. Don't be like that girl. This is something that they broke or they were weak, whatever. And they're just kind of toting them out to the other, the platoon or the troops per se of like, can't be like this. We can't have people like this. If you want to be part of this and you want to be strong, you can't be this. So then that just allows even more people shoving their emotions down and not wanting to speak out because, well, okay, well, I know what's going to happen, right?
Exactly.
But I got to the point that I didn't care. And like I said, I'm truly in a state of gratitude per se to my organization, to the people. I won't forget who they were. I've been my my treatments with my occupational therapist and all that stuff. I've gone to the point where I've allowed that to go, allowed that forgiveness to happen for myself, not for them, because it's better for me. And hopefully down the line, they can see 2.0 Keith and have that conversation with them. And if they do, it's about the topic. It's not about our feelings and what they should have done or how they should have been better. I think people do a good job, whether they're wrong or not, of, man, I may let that one slide. So hopefully they can see me as something of, well, maybe the next time somebody comes to me, I don't do that. I'm not that way. And it took a long time for me to be like, well, why do I need to be the poster child, or why do I want to set myself up to be a poster child of like, to be better for someone else? I want someone to be better for me. But what's happened is happened. Where do we go from now? And that's where truly being that person I needed 10 years ago that was struggling, that is now back. That's the focus. And that's what I, within my organization, I can really do well. And as well as showcasing that to other members of services, organizations, whoever.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, leadership, leading by example, I should say, at its finest, right? You're showing people what you wish you had available to you all those years ago. And now you're doing it. You're being that person for people to come to. And it's really a great way to do it, because if you see something, it's broken, well, you fix it. Find a solution to this and be the solution. And that's exactly it. So what it sounds like you're doing. Could you tell us a little bit about your brand, the Tier Response brand, and where that came from and what it's all about?
Yeah, it was something that I had worked almost like a reflection thing when I was going through my trauma timelines with my occupational therapist and who I was going to be, right? That my focus was, who was I going to be when I returned to work, really? And once we had kind of established of, okay, Keith, you can't just go back and be like, well, fuck it, I did it all on my own. You guys are left to do it yourselves, or struggle before you find your answers. And quickly, my occupational therapist and I looked at her like, that's not who you are, Keith. I can't be a dick. It's in all of us, but as far as a consistent one, it's just not me. It's not who I was as my character. It's not my DNA. So I almost kind of started off with like, what can I do to give back to the organizations and services that help me? I'm not somebody who is rich. I can simply keep writing a check for all these services and stuff, or inspire other people just to give money. What can they do as far as getting behind a cause and a brand? So I thought, well, y'all wear clothes. What can I do as far as something as being that symbol, that flag that can be showcased amongst first responders, both police, fire, ambulance, within the healthcare, corrections, military, that could unite everyone to get talking about the cause, which is mental health. So I was thinking of names, playing around, being a little creative, and use really my initial, that infant's death, which was a tier response. It's tier response is driven from the dispatch call that requires multiple emergency services to attend an incident. We're not sure at the time what needs to be done, but we'll send police, fire, ambulance, and then work together to see what is needed, what is required. There may not be enough information that, oh, it's just a fire, we don't need police, or it's a car accident, we need everybody. Mm-hmm. Approaching mental health as the call, working together as a tier, that village effort, responding to that, I thought, hey, that's kind of nice. I like how that sounds and the tier response. And then really focusing on the services, police, fire, ambulance, making sure everyone within the organizations, both uniform and civilian, were a part of it, mental, the healthcare industry with the staff of Mercury, and then having the chevron symbolize military and corrections. But really the powerful symbol that I have in all my apparel, even it be the maple leaf, because I'm a proud Canadian and we are a Canadian company, is to have that semicolon present in everything that I have, that I produce. And if people aren't aware of what exactly a semicolon is, a lot of people within mental health are aware of it because it's something that is usually tattooed on someone's person, that they've either had suicidal ideologies or they've actually had attempts. And there, people think of a semicolon and we automatically think authors and writers, and they get all these accolades and all sorts of like smooth words because they're able to articulate themselves so well. But even they, as smooth as writers are, have writer's block. So when they're writing a story or writing a sentence and they're unable to kind of, they want to say more. There's more to what's going on here, but I just don't know what it is. They insert that semicolon as a writer's block so they can finish off. Well, we can really see that semicolon as our own personal day-to-day lives, right, Scott? If we are trucking along and things are good, but we encounter some trauma, or we encounter and the time where we just need to, we're not doing good with something, we need to check out for a bit, be okay with not being okay, rather than thinking suicide is the only option to end the pain, to end how we're feeling so that we can escape it. If we were just to quickly insert that semicolon into our day-to-day and just insert that into our mental health so that we can check out, like I did, acquire a toolbox, acquire resources for however long it is, so that we just keep going. We don't stop. We don't end it. So that once we are able to pick up with what we want to do, we can forge on thriving and it can continue, right?
Exactly.
So I thought having this all together on the apparel, it would really inspire the conversations, which I want the brand to be. What is that semicolon? Why do you have three rings around the circle of your logo? All the three rings represent the inner place where group therapy takes place, or where it's a circle environment, it's close knit, it's unbreakable, it's safe. And the two exterior ones supporting that inner circle are the ripple effects that tier response wishes to be a sort of the waves of change within mental health community. And we donate funds from the apparel to those organizations so that they can run their trauma programs and services for first responders and families of first responders. So if you are a first responder and you support first responders, that's what the gear is to be. It's high quality, it's good stuff. And that's what it wants to be. So that if you see it, not only are you seeing somebody that sees and hears you as a first responder, but at the same time are supporting the trauma programs and services that I have personally been able to recover and heal, that we partner up with. And if we're able to find amazing rock stars out there doing amazing work within trauma services and organizations, well, I want you to link up with us. I want you to reach out so that I can see what you're doing. If there's able, that we can help out and support each other.
Excellent. And you're doing a lot of great work. There's a lot of symbolism that you're talking about there in the logo and the design and everything. I think that some of it, I didn't even recognize some of it when I looked at the logo myself and all of that stuff. Some of it I did catch, but I didn't catch all of it. And so it's great that you have all of that in there, but also I think more importantly that you are supporting those organizations that are supporting the first responders who need it the most. So hats off to you. I think what you're doing is excellent. Keep doing what you're doing, because I think there's a lot of people out there who will benefit from the types of work that you do. Where can people go to support you and to your response? Is there a website they can go to, social media, anything like that you can direct them to?
Yeah, I can proudly say, I know we're going to we're probably not going to put this up tomorrow, but I can proudly say when this does go up, we will have our website finally constructed. There's two ways to find us. If you just Google tierresponseapparelcompany.com, it'll lead you to us. But the quick and easy one is tiergear.ca. So www.tiergear.ca. You can link us to our website, which will have our main landing page for the store that ships worldwide, as well as we're on social media at TR_apparelco on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at TR Apparel Company. So we're always posting up what we're doing, inspirational messages. Yeah, just trying to move the needle towards having mental health be the regular conversation where someone will use it as easily as they use their dental benefits.
Excellent. So thank you again for coming on and sharing your story and the things that you're doing, your journey. I really do appreciate it and appreciate all the work that you do for the first responders and even for the yourself in terms of getting yourself better so that not only could you return to doing the things that you love, but also to help out other people along the way. I think it's incredibly powerful that you're able to do that. So thank you.
I appreciate that, Scott. And yeah, like I said, I know there's a kid out there or a girl out there looking at somebody who's a first responder and that is their dream, right? They're studying hard. They're in school with the hopes and dreams of being a first responder, police officer, paramedic. And we can really showcase a well thriving first responder as someone that, because we're always going to need them. We're never not going to need them. But if we can showcase to the next generation that, you know, it's possible to do this job and it be exposed to trauma and be exposed to all the horror that we are, there is still the ability to have a joyful, thriving, happy life.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again.
Appreciate you, Scott. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.